as this was put by another influential contemporary journalist, a man named Fadye Bulgarin. He said, "It is far better to unchain a hungry tiger or a hyena than to take off from the people the bridle of obedience to authorities and laws." Now, having said all this, let me add that one should be careful of oversimplifying all of these ideas. For this was also a positive political argument about autocracy, as we've seen before to some degree. Autocratic power was not only necessary for order to chain the wild hyena, as it were, but also the best means for ensuring progress and even a happiness. The state was to be not only mighty and controlling, but also an engine of progress. It was to be caring. It was to be beneficial, paternalistic, united truly in love with the nation and the people. And in fact, again and again, the Russian polity was described publicly as a family. This analogy was very often explicit. And in this family, the Tsar was the father, stern but benevolent, the Tsar Batushka, he was called, the Tsar father. And people, including the nobles, were children, obedient, loyal at best, needing discipline, even punishment, when appropriate. And this ideal can be seen reflected throughout the entire system at the time. Military commanders were told to be fathers to their soldiers. Landlords were told to be fathers to their peasants. Industrialists should be fathers to their workers. This brings me to the third component of this official nationality, really in some ways the most puzzling and debated of the three, the notion of nationality, narodnost, in Russia, which basically meant the special nature of Russia and of the Russian people. Now, in part, this was simply the reverse side of autocracy. This was a view of the Russian people as special, as somehow uniquely loving and obedient subjects of the Tsar and the landlords and all those in authority, as really specially made to be children, loyal, obedient, but also childlike in their lack of self-control and their need for a strong hand and loving guidance. This notion of the special nature of the Russian people as fitting so well in this paternalistic system was certainly a view shared by Nicholas I. A typical example. Nicholas liked to tell the story of how in 1831, when there was a minor military uprising, but a threatening one, the ordinary soldiers were not against him personally, just against the abuse of certain officers. And he described how he rode right there amidst the troops that were rebelling in order to personally quell it just by his own presence. And these are his words, often repeated. "Observe that except for Orlov and Chernyshev," these are two high officials who were there, "I was absolutely alone among them, and they all lay flat, their faces to the ground. Ah, that's the Russian people for you." And he told other stories during great cholera riots in St. Petersburg. He did the same thing, rode out into the mad crowds, and his presence alone inspired them with love and devotion, and the riot suddenly ended. "There's the Russian people for you," he says. These ideas, of course, have their roots in European thought of the day. There was a widespread notion throughout Europe, including Russia, that every nation had its own particular unique genius, its distinctive history, institutions, language, temperament, views. Russia's genius, it was widely believed, at least by those who articulated this official ideology, was that unique bond between Tsar and people, that special relationship of love and devotion, such as you'd find in no other country, and indeed was the strength and salvation of Russia. On the other hand, many Russians began to feel that this sort of talk was archaic and dangerous, simply not suitable for a modern state trying to exist in the modern European world where institutions were there to represent people's interests, where there were mediating forms of power. And as we'll see, this ideology and opposition to this official nationality would be one of the main ideas, one of the main conflicts tearing apart Russian life in the 19th and early 20th century, leading to crisis and even revolution. Next time, we'll look at a man who in many ways in his life felt and even embodied many of these tensions and embodied them as well in his very widespread, loved, influential writings. And this is Alexander Pushkin, a man who became known as Russia's national poet for the ways in which he defined even the meaning of Russia and the meaning of what it meant to be Russian.